9:40 a.m. Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Responses today from the man who led a march on Moscow and President Vladimir Putin. CBS's Ian Lee with the latest.
Yevgeny Prigozhin broke his silence, releasing an audio message for the first time since agreeing to exile after his failed insurrection. The Wagner leader denied trying to overthrow Russian President Vladimir Putin and said his fight was with the country's military leaders. But hours later, the Russian president responded, calling Wagner's actions a rebellion and vowing to bring its organizers to justice.
Crews are trying to clean up after tornadoes in Indiana and severe storms throughout the South. CBS's Christian Benavides with more.
The weather knocked out power to thousands, leaving residents across the South without the ability to cool off as they also deal with dangerously high temperatures.
It's Texas, so we always expect some heat.
There's another week of triple-digit heat for Texas. Prosecutors in Idaho say they'll pursue the death penalty against the man charged with killing four University of Idaho students last November. CBS's Christopher Cruz.
In a court filing, Latah County Prosecutor Bill Thompson said there were several aggravating factors in the stabbing deaths that 28-year-old PhD student Brian Koberger is accused of. Those factors are required in a first-degree murder case in order for the state to be able to ask that the death penalty be imposed. Thompson said he found no mitigating circumstances that would prevent him from seeking capital punishment for Koberger. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
Police in Fort Myers, Florida are investigating after a car ended up in a pond late last night, apparently causing five people inside to drown. Sergeant Christine Aroni says the victims were all teenagers.
It is a single vehicle crash that we are investigating. There was five occupants. There was two females and three males. Yes, there were some employees from the Texas Roadhouse in that vehicle.
More on the weather. CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson says more storms are in the forecast for the eastern seaboard tomorrow and are expected to complicate travel in the area.
It's another one that's going to be snarling potentially commutes and also air travel right along the eastern seaboard, and that is from D.C. through Baltimore, Philly, up into New York. All it takes is some lightning near some runways, and you can't really have any movements for a while.
An estimated 2 million Muslim pilgrims have started the annual Hajj pilgrimage. They're making their way out of Mecca after circling Islam's holiest site. This is the first time it has been at full capacity since the start of the pandemic 3 years ago. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in southeast Wisconsin. A settlement has been reached between the city of Waukesha and the owners of West Horizon Condominiums. The owners may have to foot the bill for the demolition costs, depending on the outcome of their pending appeal against their insurance company. The demolition process is set to begin October 1st. The numbers on the We Energy's outage map in Waukesha County keep going down. There was still almost 2,000 homes and businesses without power earlier today, and that was down from about 75,000 customers in the dark over the weekend. Riders are hopping on a new bus line. Jimmy Koska has more.
In its inaugural week of operation in June, the Connect One bus rapid transit line connecting Wauwatosa and downtown Milwaukee experienced an average of 2,800 daily riders, totaling nearly 17,000 rides. The bus line is offering free service until the end of September.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs, GTW Law.
Look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition: wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief. Russian President Putin says the aborted rebellion by the leader of the Wagner group played into the hands of Russia's enemies. CBS's Ian Lee with Yevgeny Prigozhin's response.
This was a lot building up to this march to Moscow, but the one thing he was adamant about was that this wasn't a mutiny against Putin.
More in the South will soon feel the heat, CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson.
As we get later in the week, the heat actually expands, so we start bringing in Oklahoma, and we start bringing in Arkansas, and Missouri,
here's what you need to know
and
in
Mississippi,
Southeast
and Louisiana into air quality the record-breaking
is not good.
Anderson Lee Aldridge pleads guilty to killing
Thursday.
Five people and injuring
Pacific
dozens
media
more in an
LGBTQ+
club shooting in Colorado Springs last year. He'll spend life in prison. Michael Anderson survived the shooting.
I hope he thinks about those words for the rest of his life. And he spends that time
almost 2,000 homes and businesses without power earlier today. And that was down from about 75,000 customers in the dark over the weekend.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
A new remote office for officers is opening. Melissa Kay has more.
The Waukesha Mobile Command Center is ready for operation. The almost $1 million custom-made truck gives police space to operate at major events, with cameras able to see up to four blocks away. The new unit doubles the previous command center space.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Wachs has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs, 855-954-1186.
Calling to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Gary from Sussex. Hey, Gary.
Whose birthday is it? Is it both you guys' birthday or is it Dom's or Mike's?
It's my birthday today. Mike's was 2 days ago.
I'm going to sing a happy birthday, and I'm going to sing it the right way. Happy birthday to you, Mr. President of his radio station and his sidekick.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. That cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
how much worse do Republicans want to make it? How much more are they willing to destroy? How much of the House are they going to tear down? How far to the ground are you willing to let them destroy this country with their idiocy? This is the frustrating part in all of this. There is no policy that Republicans are looking for right now that's going to help this country. Everything that they are pushing is pain, suffering, struggle. And again, you know, this comes back to my belief that the leaders, the religion folks, the faith and freedom people, the fire and brimstone folks want that kind of misery. They want that kind of suffering, especially because you're not chosen. And I look at this latest bit that's coming around. Republicans are pushing heavy to restart the student loan repayment stuff. You know, during the pandemic, you know, people who had student loans, we paused the student loans. You know, Biden's trying to push this off as long as possible. And understand, the economists that are weighing in on this are saying, look, if we restart these loan payments, the pressure on consumers is going to be so great that we're probably going to throw ourselves into a recession. The latest polling said that about a third of borrowers, they're not going to be able to make the payments. So now you're going to have chaos. You're going to have all kinds of stuff going on. Where's the help? Because we now know during the pandemic, people who took out student loans, just trying to make ends meet. It was a recession. Blame it on. And we could. We're being pushed into polar opposites and not coming to any reasonable ideas. The student loan situation is simple. The federal government is at a very low rate. They charge 0.5% interest, which is what would cover the cost of administering them. And people would just pay back what they borrowed. Not a profit, rich, not making these scheme student loan groups wealthier than they can imagine, but saying, look, we need an educated workforce. We need people who are able to name it, doctors, lawyers, you know, name it, engineers, you know, phlebotomists, name it. We need an educated populace. They were forced to take out these loans to get this education. They should pay it back. And I've never said anything different. I've never said that we should forgive it. I've never been on the forgiveness bandwagon. I've always said, look, they should pay it back. But they should pay back what they borrowed. Not with a gazillion dollars in interest. And as I've talked about before, I know people who have got massive student loan debts. For-profit entities are gouging their eyes out. Every time they lose a job and they have to stop, the interest doesn't stop. I was thinking about this today. This idea that there was a movie a number of years ago on credit cards. One of the credit card companies was asked why they give credit cards to people who have filed bankruptcy. After the bankruptcy discharge. So like if someone ran up a $70,000 worth of credit card bills and the bankruptcy judge wipes it out, the credit card company, you know, they want to be the first one to get that person a credit card because they know with our law that you can't file bankruptcy again for X amount of years. So they know if they get in first, they're going to be top of the list to get repaid. But the guy said, look, these are people who have a taste for credit. These are people who we know are used to being in debt. This is what the student loan situation has created in this country. going to be able to get into the middle class is to take out a massive amount of debt. Probably imagine at 17 years old to go to college and get this opportunity. And look, college graduates do better than non-college graduates. That's right on the table. But what we've done is we've trained a generation to be willing to be in debt. We've trained a generation to not worry about, hey, you know, I've got $100,000 in student loan debt. What's $30,000 for a car? You know, what's $20,000 on a credit card? You get this kind of, as that guy said, a taste for credit, and you're willing to, you know, just make payments because you never think you're getting out from under it. This is what we've done to a couple of generations. Like, I grew up with the mindset of don't go in debt. Pay things off. Don't be long-term debt. Make sure that you're fiscally in a sound spot. Have savings for emergencies in the future. We've trained a generation that's old school thinking. It's okay to be in massive amounts of debt. And I think that's wrong. And now, are we surprised that during the pandemic you had people taking on more debt? Are you surprised that a third of the people aren't going to be able to make payments? So immediately you're going to have a ton of money pulled out of the consumer market. They're hurt first. And that's how the economy will slow and we're going to get nailed. And this will make our destroyer Republican friends very happy, because they get the recession they've been all tingly in the panties over for a very long time, so they can put it on Joe Biden, and they get to punish people. Because I still come back to, the cruelty is the point. What they do is about inflicting suffering. And I know that's hard to hear. Because I don't want to believe it either, but I look at what they do. And I wish someone would say, no, Rick, this is why they do it. And I know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all that rhetorical nonsense not buying. And hasn't worked. This, for me, is why I'm such a supporter of Joe Biden's. Doing the work, moving us forward with ideas and plans. Now, we can debate those ideas and plans. You know, I talk about this all the time with my friend Joe Walsh. We disagree policy-wise on just about everything. But the idea of saving democracy is something we agree on. We look forward to the day when we can argue about policy. The question becomes, how long is it going to take us to wake up? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day 1,400 workers at the Milwaukee Electric Railway and Light Company launched a four-day strike. Three unions, representing about a third of the total employees, were fighting to break the hold of the company union. The Transit and Power Company had already fired 13 workers for union activity. IBEW, Operating Engineers, and the Amalgamated Association of Street and Electric Railway Employees Union led the walkout. They demanded reinstatement of their fired co-workers. They also wanted the right to pick their own bargaining representatives and insisted the company union rescind its policy of barring strikers from membership and further employment. The walkout began early in the morning as strikers surrounded car barns, garages, and power plants. Company agents barricaded facilities with barbed wire, supplied Pullman cars for strikebreakers, and posted armed guards on streetcars. Almost immediately, striker Joseph Urbanski was mowed down and seriously injured as he tried to stop a scab streetcar. By nightfall, 5,000 strikers and their supporters had blocked 5 transit lines. They ripped protective screens from the streetcar windows and forced scab drivers to abandon their routes. As crowds swelled to 10,000 on the second day of the strike, a little more than half of all cars were in service. More than 100 streetcars had been damaged. Socialist Mayor Daniel Hoehn placed the blame squarely on the utility company. Street battles with police and scabs continued into the third day of the strike. Milwaukee's Federated Trades and Building Trades Councils threatened a general strike in the city by July 2nd if the strike was not settled. By June 30th, workers celebrated total victory when the company conceded to all of their demands. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
In Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Humpty Dumpty scornfully declares that when I use a word, it means just what I choose it to mean. So what does woke mean? It's become the pet political aspersion that today's kooky right-wing hucksters hurl at liberals. But the hurlers would be whopper-jawed to learn that it was actually coined by and for progressives. Indeed, it admonishes people to be awake to the dangers posed by hate-filled bigots and reactionaries like, well, like today's right-wing extremists. Surprising historical tidbit. The first person reported to have used the word was Huddy Ledbetter, the legendary black blues artist known as Leadbelly. Among his many classic songs was Scottsboro Boys, about nine black teenagers falsely accused in 1931 of raping two Alabama white women. As a black musician who traveled the back roads of the Jim Crow South, Leadbelly warned others to pay attention when in a viciously racist state. Best stay woke, he cautioned. But out of blind ignorance, blind arrogance, or both, today's adapters of the Jim Crow mentality have perverted common sense wokeness into a verbal whip to lash African Americans, immigrants, Democrats, women, LGBTQ people, and all others they don't like. Pretty much everyone who looks, thinks, prays, and acts different from them. How kooky? They've declared librarians, science, Mickey Mouse, and Bud Light to be their evil enemies. Don't be woke, they bark, demanding autocratic, plutocratic, and theocratic laws to coerce compliance with their own retrogressive bigotries. This is Jim Hightower saying, bear in mind that this is no longer a fringe cult, but the mainstream of the Republican Party, including its top congressional leaders, presidential wannabes, and state officials. Actually, you can easily comprehend what these Humpty Dumpties really mean by their don't be woke war cry. Just substitute the word sane for woke.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So here's a distraction. I've been followed on Twitter, Teamsters President Sean O'Brien, who tweeted out a couple of days ago, going after the greedy CEO, this Mark Wayne Mullen. And Mark Wayne Mullen tweeted back that, they're ready to throw fists. Challenged him to an MMA fight. Because O'Brien called him a clown, and I think he is a clown. I don't think he belongs in the Senate. But he went back after him, so it's going to be interesting to see if O'Brien, who is a boxer, the guy who's he's a tough guy, and Mark Wayne Mullen, who is an MMA fighter, going to see it. Interesting to see if they get together. But to be honest, major distraction from the fact that working people are getting screwed over, and I think it's the reason that Mullen did it. But we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, I don't know if you saw the news about the proposal that UPS put on the table to the Teamsters for the UPS contract, but it's almost like daring the Teamsters to go out on strike, and that's why I've asked our good friend Richard Hooker to come talk with us. Richard's the Secretary-Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623 in Philadelphia, teamsterslocal623.org, the website. Richard, thanks for taking time for us.
Brother, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with this little dust up between O'Brien and Mark Wayne Mullen. This has been coming for a while, I think.
Yes, and now we're going to see. O'Brien is going to have to put his money where his mouth is. I mean, when you go on Twitter and say any place, any time, and all this other kind of stuff, these are the things that could happen. So if it happens, good luck to him. But I think the senator is a MMA fighter, correct?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
My position on this is simple. I mean, the reality is I stand with O'Brien because O'Brien's fighting for working people. Mullen is a greedy CEO. He is somebody who's bullied people over the years, especially his workforce. So for me, I'm going to, even if O'Brien is the underdog, I'm cheering that guy out.
Yeah, I mean, this, you always got to cheer for the working man over the employer. So, you know, but I think this is one of them checks that he may not be able to cash. Yeah, like you said, this is a big distraction. I mean, you know, we got some big things happening, and I think we need to focus on ABF contract, UPS contract, the situation at Yellow Freight. I mean, these things that we really need to be paying attention to, and not these two individuals sparring on Twitter, potentially have a fight. I mean, listen, working people need help, and this is not the way to do it. So hopefully they can squash it and move on.
Let's talk about the UPS offer. I saw what was leaked, and I got to be honest, as someone who's done negotiating in the past and had been part of this kind of stuff, I looked at that as a giant middle finger from UPS. There is no way any sane, rational person would have even entertained what they put on the table. And it's not surprising that the Teamsters negotiating committee walked out the door. I wanted to get your thoughts, though.
Yeah, when you make a company the most profitable it has ever been, and then they come to the table with pennies, you're talking about 27 and a half cents every 6 months for the first 2 years, and then the last 3 years, 30 cents every 6 months. That's not a raise. It's just a slap in the face of every UPS Teamster. But not only that, it's a slap in the face to labor in general. The employer is trying to tell you that no matter what you do, no matter how many profits you give them, they will still give you crumbs. And it's just totally disrespectful. And at this rate, I don't see any other way that we have to strike, because they need to know that we're just not going to take this at all.
Yeah, I had listeners email me and ask me what I thought. And I said, look, if just what I see from the outside, if this is an actual true proposal, this is a declaration of war. This is go on strike. We're ready to take you on. And that, I got to tell you, that's one of those things that I find troubling.
I agree, but again, this is the arrogance and the you know, hostility, the contentious behavior of UPS. They don't believe that we're up for the fight. They believe that they can do this job on their own. They don't need the Teamsters, because why would you do that?
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to send a message. Like you said, this is a war cry. Okay. You got a new leadership. They're talking about striking us. We've been hearing this for the last 2 years. Put your money where your mouth is. We're going to give you 27 and a half cents every 6 months. Now what you going to do? And they're going to find out. If they keep up these antics, they're going to find out what we're going to do. August 1st will be here before you know it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that at some point we have to, without question, have to push back on. And I think your members are ready for that.
Oh, absolutely. We've been paying our members here at 623 for the last 2.5 years. We've been talking about a strike savings. We've been talking about how they can save money each week. We've had our credit union come down to the union hall for our general membership meetings to talk about savings plans for finances. We've been talking about the issues. We've been talking about strike captains and then just being ready for this fight if it needs to be taken to the street. We have a documentary right now going on with our members, so they're telling their stories, and I can't wait for everybody to see this. It talks about the brutality and the hostility and the retaliation harassment that UPS puts our members through. And that story is being told right now, and our members are ready. Once they saw these proposals, that just really pushed them over the edge to want to take the company to the street.
You know, and this is one of those things where UPS, what did they have? Like, what was it, $13.9 billion in profit?
Yes.
It's not like they can't afford to share a little. And I know that they've done massive stock buybacks to enrich investors and enrich the CEO. It seems like this is that moment where they think they're ready to take the Teamsters on and try and break things up.
Absolutely. And this is where we need, as Teamsters, we have to be more together than ever. We can't show the company any sign of weakness. We can't let the company see that we don't want to strike, or we can't be talking about it, about, oh man, I'm across the picket line. This is where we need to be more unified than ever before, because the company is really calling our bluff right now, and we need to answer the call. We need to show up, stand out, do whatever we need to do to show this company they can take chances if they want to, but come August 1st, we'll see them on the side of the road.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Richard Hooker. Richard's the Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623 in Philadelphia. You can check out their website, teamsters local623.org. We'll get links out on social media. Now, there's been some reporting by a number of different places saying that, you know, this is all just a show. This is all just, you know, a performance that really the union's in bed with the company, that they're not going to get a great contract, that there's all this. Do you buy in any of this stuff that's being thrown out?
Well, that's the issue with, you know, social media and the members not receiving the information that they're asking for, because I think a lot of this stuff wouldn't come up if the members had actually saw the union's proposals and saw what they were asking for. Because I think what happens is, when you're not getting the information that is needed, that's when rumors, that's when the distractions, that's when everybody is kind of doing their own thing. But if we could see what the union has put forth, then I think a lot of these rumors wouldn't even have been produced. So hopefully moving forward, that the IBT and the National Negotiating Committee could let the membership see what they're actually proposing. That way we could put all these rumors and all of this ambiguity to bed, because it's not good, especially going into the ninth inning, man. We need to be more unified. We need to make sure that we are standing firm. But in order to do that, we do need to see what our officials and negotiators have proposed to the company. That way, all the deal has already been done, they're in the bed with the management and all this other kind of stuff. We need to kick that stuff to the curb, because in order for us to win this contract, everybody has to be together.
And as I understand, look, and I've talked to a number of UPS workers across the country, and folks have emailed me and shared their thoughts. It seems like now, more than any time that I can remember, the members are ready for bear. I mean, this has been something that has been cooking. So it seems like there's a perfect storm that we should probably be expecting on August 1st, you know, there to be a strike.
Absolutely. Listen, this pandemic really pushed workers to the edge, especially UPS workers. 4-6 punches, you know, they dangled a carrot in front of our members' face with the market rate adjustments, and then it took them back without telling them. The aggressive management style, the hostility of working there, people dying while working, you know, not getting paid on time, not being paid properly. And then you're constantly working, making the company all these profits, and then they give you a proposal that is not even worth the paper that it's put on. All of that has pushed the workers to the edge. And then, listen, August 1st can't get here fast enough if they don't change their approach to how they go to negotiate.
Any words to your members?
Listen, let's stay united. And you know, we're going to win this fight. There's no doubt in my mind, because there is nothing that UPS can do without us. There's no delivery. There's no profits. There is nothing. So they need us more than they try to make it seem like they don't. They do. And they cannot make it without the worker. They cannot make it without every single part-timer, every single feeder driver, every single package driver. They cannot make it without us. And as long as we remember that, we have the upper hand. There is no profit without our labor. There is no all these stock buybacks and all this profitability that they have endured over the last few years. There is none of that without us. Stay united, stay ready to fight, and get some good shoes, because we're going to be walking that line come August 1st.
There you go. Now, you know, I remember during the pandemic, and you had talked about the market rate adjustment. You know, here locally where I'm at, they were paying like $24 an hour to get people to come and work on the inside. I'm looking at the numbers that they put on the table, and that's nowhere near what they put on the table. And that just seems odd to me, considering that, you know, during the pandemic, they were paying that rate. Then they clawed it back. And now they're getting nowhere even close to that in this moment.
like you said earlier, this is a declaration of war. They don't believe that we have enough to fight them. They probably believe that we're not united. And we have to show them. Sometimes, man, in order to beat a bully, you got to punch him in the mouth. And August 1st, we're going to be punching him in the mouth. And it's up to them. This strike is totally up to them, not up to us.
Yeah.
This is up to them. And if they make the wrong decision, then August 1st, we'll be on the other side of the road and they'll be in those trucks burning up. Hopefully they don't pass out. Hopefully nobody loses their life. But if it happens, that's on them, because our workers are the best at what we do. They made the company the most profitable it has ever been. The reason UPS is number one in logistics is because of the Teamsters, and they need to know that. Yeah. They know it, but they're going to find out the hard way.
Yeah, what's that? You blank around and find out? Yeah, they're going to find out. Now, not just money just isn't the big sticking points in this either. There was a lot of language, economic language, that, you know, that the O'Brien folks were saying, look, we want to get rid of the 22.4. We want to do away with the two tiers. We want to make this a full-time job again. There's a lot more here than just the, you know, the pennies and the dollars and cents. There's actually a future here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Getting rid of the 224 is huge, because those members were doing the same exact job as a regular package car driver, but they were getting paid $5-6 less, and they didn't have the protections as a regular package car driver. Same job, same pay. Equal work for equal pay. Then you have the part-timers looking for full-time jobs. That needs to happen. Then this harassment and intimidation that UPS really just thrives on, that definitely needs to be addressed, because UPS has made so much money, they'll just throw money at the problem and it's not being fixed. You can't throw money at harassment. You can't throw money at, you know, the 224s. It has to be taken care of, just like supervisors working. You know, they'll just pay that off. It needs to be some really serious language changes, some really serious penalties, because UPS has made so much money, they could just throw it away. And they need to know that these issues that we are more concerned about is not something that you can throw money at. We can't be bought off. We don't want to come to work and be retaliated against. If I get hurt, I don't want to be threatened with my job, right? That stuff money can't address. So hopefully the language in the contract addresses those things, so our members can come to work in peace and not be bullied all the time.
A little, you know, wages, hours, conditions. That's what people organize and negotiate over. Richard, I wish you guys the best. I know you'll be back between now and if there is a strike. I hope there's not. I hope you get what you guys earn. But, you know, in the event that you have to go, you got to go.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Richard Hooker. Appreciate the time. Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1893. That was the day that Illinois Governor John Peter Altgeld pardoned Samuel Fielden, Oscar Niebe, and Michael Schwab, who were imprisoned for their alleged role in the Haymarket bombing of 1886. Eight men had been accused of throwing a bomb at a workers' rally in Chicago. Four were hung, one died in prison before he could be executed, and three were incarcerated. Governor Altgeld had been born in Germany. He was a progressive leader who helped pass worker safety laws and child labor laws. Efforts to free the three Haymarket prisoners had been underway since their sentencing. During the trial, there was no physical evidence linking any of the accused men to the crime. Governor Altgeld agreed to look into the case. He issued a report outlining his findings.
At the end, he concluded, quote, the trial was not fair. He wrote, quote, I'm convinced that it is clearly my duty to act. I grant an absolute pardon to Samuel Fielden, Oscar Niebuhr, and Michael Schwab this 26th day of June, 1893. This pardon came just one day after a monument to the martyrs was dedicated at the cemetery where the five martyrs were buried. Today, part of Governor Altgeld's pardon is inscribed on a plaque on the backside of that monument. Governor Altgeld paid a political price for the pardon. He was attacked by the press. The Chicago Tribune attacked his German heritage, declaring there was, quote, not a drop of true American blood in his veins. He does not reason like an American, does not feel like one, and consequently does not behave like one. In 1896, he lost his bid at re-election for standing up for justice. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The reality is nobody wants to go on strike, and I hope that the Teamsters come to an agreement. I hope UPS gets their heads out of the, you know, that orifice. And, you know, look, you know, as someone who's been on strike in the past, there's nothing great comes of this. UPS is going to lose enormous amounts of profit, going to lose enormous numbers of customers. It doesn't make any sense for them to do what they're doing. The beginning of this is, hey, you know, I think they believe that there's going to be a moment of weakness, and I think they're going to be sorely mistaken. Now, it's still 35 days down the road to get where things need to get, and we will see if they come around. Now, interesting weekend. Donald Trump was in front of the faith. And Freedom Coalition Conference, played the martyr card. And, you know, it's what he's got. He's got the martyr card, got to play the martyr card. That's what they did. So while he's giving his spiel, he, you know, said, you know, every time the radical left Democrats, Marxists, communists, and fascists indict me, I consider it a great badge of honor and a badge of courage. I consider it both. Essentially, I'm being indicted for you. You know, I didn't see the thorny crown on his head. I didn't see him, you know, lugging the cross up the hill. But that's what he was doing. He's playing the martyr card. And the faithful there, you know, they ate it up. They sucked it up. And the weird thing is you think of these people who want the Ten Commandments plastered everywhere. This is a guy who's broken all of them. You know, these are people who, you know, the values voter. This is a guy void of values. But he's their guy. Weirdly enough, Mike Pence didn't get really any kind of reasonable reception. You would think that's them. He is their guy. And not so much. Not so much at all. And the scary part, and this is the thing that gets me. The scary part in all of this is the faithful. Again, the people who are supposed to be our moral compass. The ones who are supposed to keep us on the straight and narrow. They're the most angry. The most hate-filled. And backing the worst person in the entire field. So what does that say about religion in this country? Or at least our faith and values and freedom voters. What does it say about them? Now, I was having this conversation with my daughter today. And you know, I was saying, look, you know, I think religion's a good thing if you use it as a way to make yourself better. To want to be more tolerant and more empathetic and more compassionate. But if it's about fire and brimstone, if it's about punishment, if it's about, you know, imposing your will, that, you know, I'm not there with you. You're losing me. And you look at what came out of this. You know, they're going after gender identity. They're going after, you know, all of this stuff. And attacking all of these things. And you go, at some point, don't we have to say enough? Let's quick go to the phones. Got Alice on one. How are we doing, Alice?
We're doing okay.
What's on your mind?
What I wanted to say was, you know, religion in this country, the extremists are the ones who overly identify, I guess I want to say, as Christian. Their concept of what Christianity is, if you check the concept of Christianity, like in France or England or you know, Wales or anywhere else, a lot of these other first world nations, it's as different as day and night. And I know this because I've talked to a lot of people. In fact, a friend of mine that lives in England that had come over with her husband and lived here for about 4 months, she said, you know, I really get scared anymore when I am talking to someone or first meeting them, and the first thing out of their mouth is I'm a good God-fearing Christian. She said, because I know that it's someone that's hateful, because they inevitably start spewing hate towards other people.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the scary part to me. Look, I grew up in the Catholic Church at a time when it was about, you know, peace and social justice. It was about, it was against war. It was, you know, help feed the poor, you know, help the sick. That's what I learned about. This newfangled stuff, the prosperity gospel, we're all going to be rich and, you know, screw those poor people, I'm struggling with.
Yeah, it is not the acceptable form of Christianity, I think, by the majority of people in our nation and by the majority of people in other nations. But, you know, it's all about control and fascism. But, you know, it is what it is. And I always say, and I believe truly, that it is a reaction towards the 70s.
You're listening to The Shah, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.